Control is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Communication is the problem to the answer. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Marco Marquez, and former Chiefs wide receiver Mark Boerger. What's up, Mark? How are you?
I'm good. Nate, where are you at? Camped outside of Bramblage?
Yeah, who knows?
Ready for the Sunflower Showdown? Live from Manhattan?
Hey, there's no hate in his heart.
He loves
K-State, right. he said earlier today.
Yes.
How about that?
I know.
Answer.
Me?
Yes.
Yeah, your name's Nate, isn't it?
Well, answer what? I already said I love K-State.
I said, are you camped outside of Bramblage right now?
No, I'm not allowed within the state of Kansas during this game anymore.
Oh, okay.
They kicked me out of the whole state.
No. You should be there.
Bye-bye.
If there is ever a straw that's going to stir the drink of this rivalry, it's you.
Nobody wants that drink stirred by me.
Do you want to tell Mark where you are, or will you?
I'm in Denver, Colorado right now, getting ready for a big Invicta fight tomorrow night.
Nice.
So
I have some stats to throw at you here. I saw this.
I'm assuming, by the way, Nate, I'm assuming you're announcing this and not
fighting.
You're fighting.
He's fighting for the bantamweight title.
That's right. Okay.
He's been training hard.
Getting ready for this fight, Invicta fight.
Hey, she's been training hard. He's ready to go. Okay. I saw this stat, and I said no. And then I looked it up, and it is true. Okay. All-time sack leaders in the postseason.
Oh, yeah, I saw this. I know where you're going with this.
Okay, now, before 1982, they weren't official. So since 1982. So if you know, or do you guys both know where I'm going with this? Mark already does because he's very savvy. Nate, do you?
No.
Okay. Where does Frank Clark rank? Since they've kept the stat in 1982, all-time career playoff sack leaders.
Okay, I saw this tweet, so I can't answer.
Marco, have you seen it?
I don't even know who Frank Clark is.
Right.
He's ranked third all-time in playoff sacks.
No. He is ranked fifth all-time in career playoff sacks. The players ahead of him: Willie McGinnis has 16. Bruce Smith has 14.5. Terrell Suggs, 12.5. Reggie White, 12. And then Frank Clark is tied at 11 with Dwight Freeney, Charles Haley, James Harrison, Clay Matthews, Lamar Woodley. Behind them at 10.5, Richard Dent, Von Miller at 10.5. And then Trace Armstrong, Charles Mann, Tony Tolbert, Michael Strahan, Neil Smith, Mike Vrabel. There ain't no dogs on that list. That's wild. I mean, that's just wild to me. I mean, I know sacks aren't everything, but still.
It also speaks to how many times he's been in the playoffs, too.
Right? I mean, I don't.
It does.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of games. He's played in a lot of playoff games in Seattle and in Kansas City. But it is an amazing stat.
Like, Willie McGinnis has played in, because he's the leader. He played in 18 playoff games. How many do you think Frank the Tank's played in?
Well,
he got a good chunk here.
Yeah.
He has played in, let's see, 14.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I'm not taking anything away from that at all. But that's a surprising stat to me.
Sure it is. Like Von Miller, and he's been fantastic in the postseason.
How many postseason games Von Miller have, though?
11.
Okay.
But those are crazy good numbers. And so
they are.
Then the other number we're reminded of, in 12 career playoff games, Chris Jones is still searching for his first sack.
Yes.
Even though he made a huge impact in the Super
Correct.
Bowl, batting
Correct.
Down passes and stuff, but like, what surprises you more? That Frank Clark is going to be like probably top three, maybe top for sure top four if he gets another sack in NFL history and postseason sacks, or Chris Jones doesn't have any.
I think what surprises me more is that Chris Jones doesn't have any. But then again, up until about a year ago, a year or two ago with Chris Jones and this defense, he played inside a lot more. They didn't move him around as much. And sometimes you got to do the dirty work. And I would be interested to look at how many pressures Chris Jones had in those playoff games, because mm-hmm. he does wreak havoc. And when I say that, obviously a sack number is not there for him, but you know, he is making a contribution and impacting games with impactful plays. Just maybe not the sack numbers.
Nate, any thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that I will be almost stunned if Chris Jones ends this season still on zero postseason sacks. I think he is playing, Steven, at a whole nother level.
Right. All right, so we will, and yes, I think for the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl, Chris Jones better have a handful of sacks. All right, we're going to go through some sound that I shared with our young friend Marco Marquez that I wanted to play today. Marco, I'm referencing the tweet I sent you from Yahoo Sports featuring Joey Bosa, who is still super pissed off after that tremendous meltdown by the Chargers against the Jags, and he did a lot to help that meltdown happen. Lining up to the neutral zone, throwing his helmet down, Brandon Staley giving his helmet back, and then he throws it down again, yelling at officials, you know, ill-timed penalties. He did a lot of things to hurt his team. And so now he had a chance to speak to the media yesterday. He is this Joey Bosa is not happy. Now, Marco Marquez is not happy. There we go, play Joey Bosa.
I need to be more accountable for my actions, obviously, but it's a heated game, and I'm hurting out there. I'm playing on half a leg. I'm getting dragged to the ground, whatever. Could hurt me, along with screwing our team. And, yeah, maybe some of them weren't as blatant as I thought, but I don't know. It's I think there just needs to be more accountability on. I mean, if I say something to them, I get a $40,000 fine. But if they blow a call that ruins an entire team's season, they get to. They're probably back in the locker room after the game, like, "Oh, got that. Oh yeah, got him. 15 yards. What a loser." I guarantee it. That's what they're talking like in the back. Whatever, power trip. I'm sick of those people, and I'm just about my third F-bomb so far. Sorry, but man, oof.
You think the officials are back there in the dressing room? Ha ha! Got that a-hole. 15 yards, loser.
My favorite part of that whole deal is
he's
just,
sick of those people.
I'm out here playing on one leg. There was just full of excuses.
Yeah,
and that's the part. Yeah, right? And then the piece of they can make a call that ruins a team season. Like, no, you guys played awful the rest of that game.
You could have a penalty that could ruin your team
yeah,
season.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, how many times have we seen that though? In a big part of the game, or a big stretch of the game in the fourth quarter, he happens to be on the sideline.
Yeah.
A lot.
It happens a lot. And a lot of, I know, was made the specific play when he lost it. The first one. Was the first one when everybody was talking about there being a false start and the holding? Was that the first one or the second one?
He was
one?
Mad about it.
Off the top.
There's so many tirades that he had. I can't remember them all.
Well, the one, everybody was talking about the false start. Like, the tackle got a little bit of a head start. Yeah, all the tackles are getting head starts in the National Football League when you
that
watch it. And
every
Joey
game.
Bosa, by the way, is looking right at him and moves in sync when the tackle moves. And there's holding on every single play in the National Football League. It to me, I do think officiating needs to get better. I think a lot of people will agree with that. But
yes,
at the end of this whole thing, on this side of things, you got to control your emotions on the field. And I know there was the first unsportsmanlike he got too. you know, he said something to the official, and it almost looked like the official ran up to him afterwards and walked with him and waited for him again. It was almost like the official said, what'd you say to me? And then he said something again, and then it was, you know, then he was getting the flag. We never heard, Joey Bosa never said what he said to the official in the first, to cause that. But, look, you got to keep your composure, and especially in playoff games. And I understand it's frustrating. And, you know, a guy in his position, you're probably frustrated with the way that game went toward the end, that all of a sudden Jacksonville's got an opportunity to potentially win the game or get back into it like they were. But I think it goes back to showing the inexperience of them playing in the playoffs. You know, you can do some of those things in the regular season. Yes, it can still cost your team. But when it's win or go home, you're in that situation. And I also find it hilarious, I think, just because it's Joey Bosa. That's just where I'm at with it, too.
And it was like that. I think that sequence encapsulated the Chargers, their season and what they are. He slams his helmet down, and then Staley goes running after like a ball boy. Here's your helmet. You know, and he gets, throws it
almost
back
like a, almost like a parent of a 3-year-old.
Right. Exactly 2-year-old. Right.
Don't throw that down.
So, Nate, any comments on what Bosa had to say there?
Well, you know my common refrain, Stephen, that you know, blaming the refs is for losers. I'm trying to go back and watch it, but if I remember correctly, on the play right before, Bosa slammed his helmet to the ground twice because he was mad at the refs and what he said there, the refs ruining the game and ruining the season for his team. There was a blatant pass interference by the Chargers on a throw into the end zone that didn't get called. And the Jags could have slammed their helmets on the ground and thrown a big temper tantrum and been all upset. But instead, they went out and they made the next play. You know, like that's I don't know if you guys have watched the NFL, but there's bad calls that happen.
No,
you know, like around the league, and you don't really get to control that, you know. And I definitely think that the officiating should try to keep improving it. It's not maybe up to the standard it should be, but if you ever think you're going to get to a point where you're going to agree with every call the refs make in any sporting event ever, good luck, you know. And so to me, like to sit there and say, well, the refs ruined the game. They handed you a terrible no call that went in your favor the play right before it, you know. So I just that stuff kind of bothers me. But I will say this: the personal foul that Bosa got earlier in the game. You guys see the clip of that ref that, like, he says something to the ref as he's walking up the field, and the ref chases him down and gets in his face, and like almost baits Bosa into saying something else, and then like throws the flag real demonstratively in his face, like I'm going to show you.
I have heard someone say that before.
And I do think that's unprofessional from the. What's that?
I have heard someone say that before. I don't know where someone described that.
Did you just say it?
Yeah,
Mark did.
Yeah, I did.
Mark said that almost word for word.
But... Damn it!
I don't know if you guys saw this, but the referee that chased him down. I don't know if you. I have no idea if you guys saw that. Other than Mark just said that word for word, but
you
other than
that. See that?
No. hey, guess what? We saw it.
Nope.
I'm going to say something that I shouldn't
I'm
say.
I'm glad you saw it.
I'm going to put this out in the atmosphere, and I shouldn't do it, but I'm going to.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what that voice from. I want to hear a little bit more of Bosa, and it just hit me who that sounds like. It sounds like.
I was trying to think that, too.
It sounds like Jamie Gumm, also known as Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. Jimmy, a little bit of, you know, listen to his voice. Yeah. Play a little bit of his.
I need to be more accountable for my actions, obviously, but
right?
It's a heated game. I'm hurting out there. I'm
put
playing
your lotion
on half a
in the
leg.
Basket.
I'm getting dragged to the ground, whatever.
Him you know, when he's doing the scene with the lipstick on it. Yeah, there's
screwing our team.
Okay, that's enough. You haven't seen that, Nate, so you don't get the reference, but I encourage you to watch a clip.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I've heard some clips of it.
Play, can you play Goodbye Horses by Q Lazarus? It should be in the system. It's an oft-played song for some reason. We like to play that song from one of everyone's favorite scenes. From you play that, and then there we go. Now, play Bosa talking. Now, let's think about this all for just a moment.
More accountable for my actions, obviously, but it's... It's a heated game, and I'm hurting out there. I'm playing on half a leg. I'm getting dragged to the ground, whatever. Could hurt me, along with screwing our team. And yeah, maybe some of them weren't as blatant as I thought, but I don't know. It's I think
puts
there
the
just
lotion in the basket.
On. If I say something to them, I get a $40,000 fine. But if they blow a call that ruins an entire team's season,
okay. Now I've officially creeped everyone out in Kansas City, so we can move on from
there. There we go.
I think it was perfect. Well done, Marco. Any final comments on Buffalo Bill and?
Maybe that's why the ref chased him down. Yeah. Threw the flag in his face.
He's had enough of this.
My only comments are the Chargers.
You sound
chargered.
Like a serial killer.
Yeah. That's right. The Chargers chargered, and yeah. It's hilarious for us here in Kansas City on stuff. But yeah, there was a lot of things in that game that, and I know we'll get into Jacksonville here in a little bit, but that cracks me up after the fact.
Okay, well, let's get into Jacksonville.
All
because
right.
That's the opponent, and we saw Jacksonville. Look, I mean. I will give Trevor Lawrence a massive amount of credit because four interceptions. I mean, there are quarterbacks that would not be able to come back from that. I mean, in their career, maybe much less in a game. And he looked like two different guys first half, but then he had that touchdown pass in the second half. I mean, that says, and then he goes to Waffle House. So all those things put together, a tremendous statement on his mental toughness.
Absolutely, watching that game. Everything went about as bad as it could for Jacksonville in the first half. And specifically the way Trevor Lawrence was playing. And having that many interceptions. You know, I was laughing, and I think I put this out there during the game. You know, Tony Dungy at one point made a comment, like the second or third drive, that Jacksonville, you know, needs to start running the ball a little bit because they abandoned their game plan. And I'm like, they didn't run the ball to begin with. They just came out throwing it. And looked awful. And, you know, the mental fortitude of Trevor Lawrence in his second year to come out and play the way he did in the second half and the way Jacksonville did. And part of, you see this a lot. They started going up tempo in the second half. Number one, they needed to because they were behind by so much. But what it does a lot of times, especially for a young quarterback, is get him in a rhythm. You can predict coverages a little bit more in those types of situations in a hurry-up type of, you know, offense or a much more up-tempo offense and simplify it a little bit more for your quarterback, and that's what they did. They went out and made plays in the second half, and the Chargers just, again, chargered and got super conservative offensively. And obviously we saw what the result was.
Nate Buchady.
What things about the Jags maybe should we be most concerned about? You know, is it the running attack? Is it their defense? Is there anything in particular that you think, like, hey, if the Chiefs got to be worried on Saturday, it's this?
Well, this game scares me a little bit. And I know Chiefs fans are probably going, okay, it's Jacksonville coming in here. But, you know, when these two teams played, what was it, week 8 or 9, Jacksonville was a 3-win team at that point. They've won 7 out of 8. We mentioned this last week, how these types of teams, who basically have been in the playoffs the entire month of November, December, having to win the last week of the season to win their division just to get in, are dangerous because they're playing with a lot of confidence. That being said, Nate, you got a really good young quarterback who's got weapons around him. You know, everybody made fun of, and even I did, a little bit of the Christian Kirk deal, reset the market.
Great deal.
He's been a tremendous asset to him. They went out and got Zay Jones as well from the Raiders.
Evan Ingram.
They put the weapons around him to help him be successful. You've got a really good head coach in Doug Peterson. And you got a running back in Travis Etienne. And
And that was that looked like a stupid pick because they had James Robinson, but now a year later, he looks terrific. Yeah.
And, you know, Christian Kirk had over 100 yards receiving in the first game against the Chiefs here. Trevor Lawrence threw for, what, 260-ish, I think, and a couple touchdowns. Like, offensively, they are dangerous. And then defensively, they're physical. We saw in that game, that's when Juju got knocked out, basically, right, or entered the concussion protocol in that game because of a hit high. Now, that safety also hit somebody else later in the game. I can't remember if it was a tight end or if it was, like, Valdez-Scantling or whoever it was at that point.
It's Valdez-Scantling.
Okay, so it's a physical defense as well. And what scares me about it, this team is on a roll. And they've got
Andre Sisco.
Sisco, that's it. Number seven. Is he number seven? I think so. But the ability to I'm going to say this, but I know obviously Jacksonville has something to lose. They lose this game, they're sitting at home. But they got nothing to lose. You just beat the Chargers at home. Huge comeback win. I think in Jacksonville, they feel like that Kansas City game in week 8 or 9 against the Chiefs obviously was kind of a launching point for them because things were starting to click for them offensively. And I know that lost that game, but I think, you know, it was a 10-point win here. We in Kansas City look at it, and so if there weren't a few other mistakes, there was the onside kick that happens, you know, some other things that the Chiefs probably blow them out. This is a different Jacksonville football team coming in here than what was here week 8 or 9. It's a completely different team, a different swagger to it, and they really have nothing to lose. They're riding on a high right now.
They can take the approach of Dante in Clerks. I'm not even supposed to be here today. They're not. They're not supposed to be at Arrowhead in the divisional round, right?
That's right.
Somebody would have told you after they walked off the field at Arrowhead on November 13th, that's your divisional round opponent.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have been like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
High five.
Exactly.
But it's a different team.
It is a different team. You know? And anything can happen in the playoffs. We've seen that over this past weekend. I still like the Chiefs' chances in this game. I'm not downplaying that. But I think people need to, when I say people, Chiefs fans.
Me.
Needed to on you.
It's
need
me.
To take a step and look at this and go, this is a dangerous football team coming in here. Now, is this the best matchup ultimately for the Chiefs in the playoffs? Yeah, absolutely. I think so in this divisional round. For sure.
It absolutely is better than the alternative, which would be playing Buffalo or Cincinnati
absolutely.
in this round.
For sure.
Okay, we will take a break. We've got Mark Boerichter in studio. We're reminiscing about our favorite moments of Silence of the Lambs. Boy, it's a feel-good Tuesday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I need to be more accountable for my actions, obviously, but it's a heated game, and I'm hurting out there. I'm playing on half a leg. I'm getting dragged to the ground, whatever. Could hurt me, along with screwing our team. And yeah, maybe some of them weren't as blatant as I thought, but... I don't know. I think there just needs to be more accountability on. If I say something to them, I get a $40,000 fine. But if they blow a call that ruins an entire team's season, they're probably back in the locker room after the game, like, I got that. Oh, yeah, got him. 15 yards, what a loser. I guarantee it. That's what they're talking like in the back. Whatever, power trip. I'm sick of those people, and I'm just about my third F-bomb so far. Sorry, but, man, oof.
Sorry for spoiling everyone's breakfast, by the way. All right, I can't talk. I keep thinking about Bosa with, like, a... I don't think I should repeat this either. Our good friend Ron listened to the show. He said this would bring a whole new definition to the tuck rule. Yes. Well done, Ron. I appreciate that. Man, I didn't think of it. Let's try to have some more fun here. I guess that's what we're doing. Mark's laughing, so I feel good. Let's hear a clip from the latest New Heights podcast with Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce. I thought this was pretty good because they had two episodes this week. The first one was the Gronk episode that was released yesterday. And so here is for the first time ever, Rob Gronkowski and Travis Kelce talking to each other about the great tight end debate.
Is it annoying to you guys to constantly be compared to each other?
All right. I mean, oh, my gosh. I mean, first of all, I mean, beginning in my career, I mean, you know, with Travis going, you know, having his first 1,000-yard season and all that, and I'm having 1,000 yards, and he's coming on the scene because I was about 2 years ahead. And obviously, I mean, you're young. You got that juice. I'm competing. I'm like, this mofo, like, this guy ain't taking my spot. Like you amped up my game for sure. I mean, at that age, you're on the lookout for that stuff.
You care big time.
Oh, I'm like, this guy ain't taking my spot. And then he does it again the next year. I'm like, all right, this guy's for real, though. Like, and then it's pissing me off. I'm like, he's trying to take my number one spot. I can tell. And, you know, over the last, I mean, and then you did it again. And then I started appreciate it. I'm like, oh man, this guy's a real deal. I mean, Travis is a real deal for sure. I mean, he's putting up 1,000 yards every year, all these catches, touchdowns, all that good stuff. He's leading the offense. And like I said, it made me amp up my game. I'm like, I can't slack one bit. And you definitely helped my game big time because, I mean, without that push, I mean, you're never going to get better. And then that 1 year, you broke my the receiving yard record. I was like, the whatever, 1,300 yards, and you got like 14. Or something, yeah. And Kittle did too, and I was like,
Kittle smoked me 45 minutes later. He got me.
I was like, oh, I gotta get back out in the field, I gotta get back out, you know. And then, but you know, when you're that age, I mean, you got that thrill in you and all that. It definitely was a challenge to me. I mean, and without that challenge, I mean, I don't think I would have been as, you know, as developed as I was and as competitive as I was for sure, but you know, over the last year now, you know, I see you just doing your thing. I mean, you got 1,000-yard seasons in a row. You had over 100 catches this year. I mean, it's just now, it's just I'm appreciating your greatness, man, what you're doing for the position.
I definitely have been chasing your greatness ever since that year, man. Even because that was the year that I actually switched to tight end, the year that you took the league by storm. And I was like, I want to be that guy. He looks like he's having a ton of fun, and he's owning everybody in the National Football League. I want to be that guy.
Okay, so there is a very colorful conversation between Rob Gronkowski and Travis Kelce. But it is interesting to hear those, you know, athletes actually admit that, because they won't normally, you know.
Right.
I don't care what anyone else is doing. Gronk's like, yeah, it was pissing me off every year. He was right on me. And so getting to the more important topic, Travis Kelce and what he's going to do in these playoffs. The first game against Jacksonville, he had 6 catches for 81 yards and a touchdown. And so clearly he's going to be a focal point for the Jags. Man, I'm just looking at the game log here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was Mecole Hardman was already out. That's how long he's been out.
Yes.
He didn't play in the first Jacksonville game. He got hurt the week before against Tennessee. And again, I'm reminded, the 3 games before he got hurt against Tennessee, the 3 games before he goes out against Buffalo, he had 3 catches, 42 yards, and a touchdown. Against San Francisco, 4 catches, 32 yards, and a touchdown. And then he had 2 rushes for 28 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then against Tennessee, 6 catches, 79 yards, and a touchdown. And so the 3 games before he got hurt, he scored 5 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like we were seeing the best from Mecole Hardman. Then he gets hurt. All signs point to him being back. And Kadarius Toney, the first game, he had 4 catches for 57 yards and a touchdown, and 2 carries for 33 yards. If they can get Hardman back with Kadarius Toney, nobody's seen that. Jags didn't see that.
Right.
And so what could that be for the Chiefs to have their full complement of weapons on Saturday?
Well, I think obviously this is the time of year you want to have all of your weapons available to you. And the Chiefs activated Mecole Hardman right before the Raiders game. He was not off the IR. He was not active for the actual game itself. But I think going into it, you know, Andy Reid even talked about, hey, holding him back and maybe giving him a couple snaps. I think it was wise for them, knowing where they were going in the playoffs, to give him an extra week or 2 weeks of rest. The full complement of weapons includes Juju Smith-Schuster, who we talked about earlier you know, went into the concussion protocol in the middle of that game. Kadarius Toney and Mecole Hardman are two guys that, you know, you can affect the game with by not even having the ball in their hands, because you can utilize the motions with them, changing the strength of formations, the jet sweep type of motions, to basically confuse the defense or make the eyes of the linebackers, the nickel corners, and everybody else have to widen, do different things because they have to respect that speed, you know, in the scheme and the pre-snap stuff that goes on. And then also they can get open.
And imagine the way McKinnon's playing, him on the field too, then Kelsey.
It just gives so many other options. Right? And the formula and blueprint for success for this Chiefs offense this year, obviously Kelsey's the number one weapon. But the ability to spread the football around to all those guys this year has been why Patrick Mahomes has had really his best career year, in my opinion, because he hasn't been able to focus just necessarily on one guy or one or two guys. He's had to play within the scope of the offense, and this offense has been better because of it. And now you're getting Mecole Hardman back. Potentially this week on things. It just gives you more weapons. And the emergence of Jerick McKinnon down the stretch here has been a huge portion for this team. Pacheco's been a big addition also in terms of being able to run the football the way he has. But it just gives you so many more options. And when Patrick Mahomes can create plays outside the pocket as well, we saw it again in Oakland, in Las Vegas against the Raiders. You know, he's flushed to his left and just waits and then pitches it, you know, shovel passes it forward to McKinnon for a touchdown. Those are all things that come into play and makes this offense so difficult to defend.
Nate Bucchetti.
Well, I'm a little, I guess, hesitant to get too excited about McCole coming back from the standpoint that if it's a soft tissue injury with lean guys like him and he's already had one setback, I'm I guess, a little worried that, you know, is he really going to be able to come out and cut it loose and not have another setback in this game? But if he does, it's awesome to have him because he is a weapon. The thing is, like, and it doesn't need to be that he goes out and has a 70-yard game with a touchdown to make a big difference. It might only be one or two plays in the game where he actually touches the ball and makes a big play, because there's only one football to go around. Like you said, Mark, there's so many weapons. And with the emergence of Jerick McKinnon, my gosh, what a weapon he's become. It's just one more guy that you have to worry about. And so, like, if he comes back and he's healthy, I don't even, like I said, I don't think he needs to have some huge statistical day to make a big difference for the Chiefs. Even if he touches the ball a small handful of times, that's one more guy that the Jags have to account for that's got elite speed out there on the field. So it'll be great if he is back. But I don't think the Chiefs need him. They've shown they can win without him, but certainly would love to have him.
Red zone is important, I think.
Yeah, but I don't care if he touches the ball this weekend. I really don't. And when I say that, the threat of having him out on the field with those other guys is enough in itself. Now, I do think he'll get some touches, okay, if he's playing. But the influence and the ability of what they can do, again, in the motions with him and Kadarius Toney, you know, clearing off some coverage for some guys down the field as well with their speed. Like, those are all threats, and you can influence a game by not touching the football. And that's where I think having him back is the threat of having him back makes a difference for this offense for sure.
So the referee assignments were announced yesterday. Thank you, baby Jesus. Bill Vinovich will be at the Dallas-San Francisco game. Cleet Bakeman can stay in the NFC with the Giants and the Eagles. Carl Cheffers. He'll be in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And then the Chiefs get Sean Hockley. And so, boy, if there wasn't already enough intrigue in the Cincinnati-Buffalo game, just wait until Carl Cheffers. We got to find out who he wants to win. Who's he favoring here? I thought Buffalo's got a really good record when he's the ref and the Bengals do not. But look, honestly, it does matter how the refs call these games, especially for the Chiefs' young defensive backfield, right?
Yes. That likes to be physical. You saw this weekend in the National Football League across all the games, for the most part, they allowed a little bit more contact down the field.
That's good?
Yes, and I think that's good if you're the Chiefs. It also means, you know, from an offensive side of things, that you've got to fight through some more things coverage-wise. You know, you've got to be a little more physical. You've got to – you can't rely on illegal contact penalties or defensive holding. Now, we did see some of those called, but there were a lot of plays, I thought, this weekend where, you know, there were 50-50 type of pieces where, you know, in the regular season, those got called a little bit more. They let them play. And I think we'd all like to think that you don't officiate differently in the postseason or as things go along, but it happens. I mean, we see it in basketball. We see it in professional football. They let them play this weekend. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens, obviously, this coming weekend. But for this young Chiefs secondary, who's playing really well for the most part, I just – the more physical they can be down the field and are allowed to play, the better off they're going to be. And then additionally to that, the Chiefs defensively have to get after this Jags offensive line and get after Trevor Lawrence. They had several sacks in that first game against Jacksonville.
Yeah, five?
I think, yeah, it was 4.5 or 5 sacks then. Chris Jones had, I think, 2 maybe in that game. You know, George Karloftis is really playing well down the stretch here as a first-round pick, as he's learned throughout the course of the year. They're starting to get after Colin Saunders, I think, had a sack in that game.
Yep. Jones had a sack and a half. Saunders had one. Leo Chenal had one. Carlos Dunlap had a half a sack. Willie Gay had a sack. So they had 5 sacks, and the Jags had none.
Yeah, and that's that right there. The Chiefs' offensive line needs to play well, but coverage in the secondary goes hand-in-hand with your pass rush. And I know the Chiefs have had a lot of sacks this year, which is a great number to have. They haven't got to the quarterback fast enough, and this is the one thing over the last couple of years in the playoffs. Now, again, these have been against better quarterbacks in Joe Burrow and Josh Allen. They haven't got the pressure they needed to. So this would be a good week to obviously get a win to move on to the AFC Championship game, but to get after Trevor Lawrence.
One more segment with Mark Boerichter after this on WHP. This song goes out to Cliff Kingsbury, who apparently is in Thailand right now, ignoring all offensive coordinator job openings. Mark, we were talking about this during the commercial break. Who is your pick between the Buffalo Bills and Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday?
Well, both of those teams snuck out of their matchups in the first wild card weekend. With wins, and Miami obviously had Buffalo on the ropes for a while. And we all know how the Cincinnati-Baltimore game ended, I guess you could say, on that side of things. But what do I think and what do I want? I think are both the same in this situation. I think it's going to be hard for Cincinnati to overcome some of their offensive line issues right now, especially with another guy going down with a dislocated kneecap. But I like Cincinnati in this game. I just do. And I also want Cincinnati to win. Number one, obviously, then the Chiefs would host an AFC Championship game if they take care of business here against Jacksonville. But then also, I think it's kind of getting that monkey off your back of beating the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow. We all know over the last calendar year what that's looked like. I think the Chiefs would be ripe and ready to go in that game, and I think it would be a different outcome. But we're talking about, you know, the potential for an AFC Championship game. Either way, the Chiefs have been to the last 4. They've hosted all of those. Hosting a 5th would be unprecedented. If you got to go play at a neutral site in Atlanta against Buffalo, that's what you have to do. But this has been a great run, and the Chiefs have to take care of business here, obviously, against Jacksonville on Saturday. And, you know, as I mentioned before, it's a scary matchup because this is a different Jacksonville team coming in here. But I do think the Chiefs take care of business Saturday, and then we'll wait to see what happens with that other game. But I like the Bengals in it.
But no question for you, you'd rather play the Bengals at Arrowhead than the Bills in Atlanta.
I think so, yes. I do.
Nate, do you agree with that?
Yeah, because especially with the situation with the Bengals offensive line right now, I know that, you know, 2 of the guys that are hurt are listed as questionable this week, but so I don't know if there would be a likelihood of them playing by the time they got to the AFC Championship game. But if they're banged up on the offensive line, then especially, yeah, I'd like to get another crack at the Bengals. And I do think the Chiefs owe them something. I mean, I know they've won three in a row, so there's the concept that they have the Chiefs' number. But I don't know. I mean, those games have been so close. I think the Chiefs are ready for the Bengals. So I'm with Mark.
Okay, who wins on the NFC side, Dallas or the 49ers?
I think the 49ers do.
Okay.
It's in San Fran.
Yeah.
Santa Clara. All this week, the hype nationally is going to be about the Niners and Cowboys game because of the history of these two teams in the playoffs back in the 90s. San Francisco's rolling right now as a complete team on things. My question is when does the Lightning stop for Brock Purdy?
And when does he have a bad game?
Yeah, because so far, and I put this out there this weekend, everybody's talking about Brock Purdy, and it's been a great story, and he's played really well. But he had dudes junior high wide open schematically this past weekend. And he made some plays with his feet also and extended plays a couple times and found running backs for touchdowns. But schematically, they had guys wide open in that game. You know, Dallas, Dak Prescott looked really, really, really good last night. It was against the Bucs.
They didn't show up.
I don't think you can really look at that performance last night. Number one, Dallas needed that type of performance, and Dak Prescott did after how they played down the stretch. But I don't necessarily know if that's a measuring stick as to where they are as a team right now. And if you look at that owner's box last night with the Jones family and everybody else, they seem happy just to win a playoff game. And
yeah,
so,
yes.
You know,
that was their first road playoff win in 30 years.
Yeah, and so because of that, Dallas obviously is a really good football team, but I like the Niners in that game.
And your official score of Chiefs-Jags, we're writing them all down, and Marcus keeping them in his pocket.
I think it's going to be, I'll go 30-24 Chiefs.
Ooh, that is not a cover, Marco Marquez.
No cover.
I repeat, no. Sound the siren. No cover. I repeat, no cover for Marco Marquez, who's trying to decide if he's going to take the Chiefs and give up how many? Nine?
Yeah, nine, I think is the line right now. I just think this is going to be a really good game. I really do. Obviously, I'd like the Chiefs to cover and win it comfortably,
right.
But I think this is going to be a really good game. I think it's going to be an offensive shootout all the way around.
That's Mark Boerichter, former Chiefs wide receiver. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, guys.
Jeff Chedia from NFL Network's up next right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.